As we noted last time, John C. Greenway and C.K. Blandin, both strongly opposed to unionization, had instigated paternalistic plans. And I must say, this is not done with any cynical intention. Both of these men had a very sincere appreciation of their workers, but paternalistic plans to win the support of their employees and to weaken union appeals. Let's look at a couple of examples of Blandin's approach. His brand of paternalism had been difficult to express during the lean years of the Depression and had primarily taken the form of maintaining employment hours. Only at the end of 1939 was he able to offer a more concrete reward for the, as he put it, loyalty and friendship of the workers who had bypassed affiliation with the national unions. Although 1939 production was only 80% of capacity in the first 8 months, even that record was better than most of the other mills of the country. Then in the last 4 months of the year, business increased and Blandin Paper Company resumed operation at 100% capacity. On the whole, the year was reasonably good, characterized by successful aggressive sales methods for the new groundwood papers, continued emphasis on the Blandin reputation for quality, and an especially heavy spring rainfall allowing greater than usual use of inexpensive water power. When profits began to rise, the company faced none of the heavy debts that plagued many mills, and Blandin was quick to take his employees into account. A statement released by Blandin and mill manager Andrews began, "For a long time, the paper company had wished to be in a position not only to give its workers steady employment at comparably high wages, but to allow employees to share in the profits of this institution. The difficulty has been that the profits have been negligible." While the letter made clear that there was yet no long-range plan for profit sharing, $17,000 would be allocated for 1939, to the delight of the employees and of Grand Rapids merchants as well. The company distributed a bonus just before Christmas, making no distinctions based on merit, but proceeding on the theory that all should share and share alike. The company gave $75 to every employee who had worked at the mill for at least a year. That was a substantial sum during the Depression, amounting to an annual wage increase of about 5%. In an editorial in the Herald Review entitled "Inspiration to the Community," Lawrence Rossman called the bonus plan a great source of satisfaction to all in Grand Rapids. He viewed the profit sharing not only as a measure of generosity, but also as an indication of victory for the future of the paper mill in the town. Well, this worked very well for Blandin. They wrote him a thank you letter, and then the employees paid to have it published in the Herald Review. "We appreciate the money. Even more than that, we appreciate the spirit which prompted the payment. The employees of the mill realize the difficulties which have been faced and understand the courage and ability with which these problems have been met by the ownership and management of the mill." And the note concluded with words paying tribute to the success of Blandin's approach to labor relations. "The Blandin Mill is known as the best in the nation in structure and in machinery. We as employees of the mill pledge every effort to make it even more noted for the loyalty, cooperation, friendship, and understanding which will prevail among all who work together for success and achievement in the future." So yeah, very positive words. Rossman noted the splendid attitude of the employees, and Blandin replied in a published note that a ring of truth and sincerity characterized the thank you note and the many other Christmas greetings he had received. "It's my dream and ambition to make this paper company an institution not only for the present, but for the future. This applies for your benefit and also for the generations of workers to come." In far-reaching terms, it would have been appreciated by Dan Gunn and the other early Grand Rapids supporters of the original mill. He continued, "The Blandin Paper Company not only belongs to you, but I like to think of it as the property of the community. Every person, in effect, directly and indirectly, is a joint owner." 2 months later, more than 200 mill employees gathered in the dining room of the Hotel Pokegama to celebrate Blandon's 68th birthday. I have to just pause a moment. He's getting up there a bit. But it's now 25 years since he purchased the mill, so he's had a long stand with it already. Lawrence Rossman, the main speaker of the evening, said that the best birthday present Blandon could receive would be assurance that all in the community and at the mill would cooperate to make the property a permanent institution. Blandon rose and spoke briefly, but he said the night was one of the great events of his lifetime. He spoke of a future with a much bigger mill and many more employees, all working in the spirit of harmony and cooperation that is now so self-evident. The evening concluded with a performance by the Grand Rapids High School Band and entertainments provided by the mill employees. In his maturing years, Charles Blandon remained at the helm of the company that had come to be the central focus of his life. C.K. Andrews effectively translated Blandon's decisions and policies into action. Blandon's relationship to the people of Grand Rapids had worked well. He had come to enjoy both his role of gentle persuasiveness in the community and the prestige that he had won there. A very direct community service Blandon particularly himself enjoyed. He insisted upon landscaping and gardening to beautify the mill in its downtown Grand Rapids location. Such concern was not common. Most paper mills were rather grim structures amidst dark surroundings. Blandon ordered the planting of a few flower beds during the first spring after the purchase of the mill. Subsequently, thorough and careful groundskeeping was routine. A sizable park with a well-kept lawn, interesting shrubbery, and walkways was developed. An underground pipe carried water from the river to a pond, feeding the creek that meandered through the grounds back to the Mississippi. A small bridge and many flowers added to the attractiveness of the scene. In Brussels, Belgium, in a centuries-old fountain, the mannequin statue's manner of releasing water to the pool below caught the eye of many a tourist in Europe. In Grand Rapids, visitors to the Blandon Gardens were equally startled by a mannequin replica of the little boy standing at the edge of the pond, relieving himself, dutifully discharging quantities of Mississippi River water. Blandon, as he guided guests through the park, always enjoyed their facial expressions and comments when they arrived at the pond. In 1940, company secretary Chris Shacker wrote an article for the Paper Industry and Paper World, a monthly trade journal, about the landscaping activities at the mill. He described the half-acre flower garden adjacent to the pond as a riot of color with a wild profusion of rose arbors, gladioli, California poppies, larkspurs, zinnias, bachelor buttons, and many, many other types of flowers. On the mill side of the river, the office park included a flagpole, more flowers, and various carefully selected shrubs. When the windowless mill was completed in 1931, a gracious expanse of lawn extended all the way to Pokegama Avenue. A retaining wall and a bandshell were added. Even the Mississippi Dam was adorned with hanging flower boxes. On completion of the new highway bridge in 1932, the grounds were regraded to conform with the simple beauty of the structure, and soon after, a large lighted fountain was installed to add a touch of the metropolitan to Grand Rapids. So, yes, very nice addition, important addition, and certainly both for the community and for the people who worked there. But Blandon has bigger ideas in mind, and next time we'll begin a look at the Blandon Foundation.